Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Earlier this week, the United States surpassed 500,000 deaths from COVID. The death toll currently stands at 506,232, according to Johns Hopkins. So many of us have lost loved ones by now. People have lost their jobs, their homes, their sense of security, and parents and children are continuing to struggle. The group Mental Health America found that between April and September of last year, 70% of people reported that loneliness or isolation was the top contributing factor to mental health issues. So on today's show, we will talk about this issue and share resources for those who might be struggling. How are you doing right now? And if you have any resources you'd like to share, we would love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Over the course of the show, we will be sharing some resources for everyone. There is a 24/7 crisis text line, which can be reached by texting 741-741. The NAMI helpline can be reached at 800-950-6264, and they offer access to trained support counselors from Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And if you have any resources you'd like to share or just really talk about how you're doing, how you're coping, you know, almost all of us are being affected by this in one way or another. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255 or email yourcall@kalw.org. Joining us now is Dr. Christine Moutier, Chief Medical Officer at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Dr. Moutier knows the impact of suicide firsthand after sadly losing colleagues. Dr. Moutier joined AFSP in 2013 and is a leader in the field of suicide prevention. Hi, Dr. Moutier. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Hello, Rose. Thank you so much for having me on at such an important moment in time.
Well, you know, Dr. Moutier, I have to say the one thing I love about this show and this station is that we can just be real. And I just want to start off on a personal story. I lost my cousin to COVID on Sunday. And I just, it's like stress that hits me at different hours of the day. I mean, doing today's show is really hard. My heart is racing. I kind of mess up more this week than usual with my words, and her face appears in my head. And, you know, I thought about taking some time off, but I thought, well, what am I going to do? I mean, it's almost like this is in some ways maybe good therapy. I don't know. It's nice to just talk about it. But can you talk about that sort of ongoing stress that a lot of people have and how that affects our overall health?
Yes, absolutely. And first of all, I'm so sorry to know that you've experienced this loss of your cousin. And, you know, grief is a complicated experience in and of itself, and certainly may afford you the opportunity to empathize with so many around the nation who are experiencing losses of that kind, and, you know, to COVID, and of different kinds as well. It is a time when our level of suffering, our experiences of loss or uncertainty of, you know, economic, financial stability, unemployment, our kids' lives being turned upside down. I mean, there's so many aspects to this, you know, and so it's the time has obviously, the pandemic has affected us all. I think it's affecting us in different ways, though, depending on our life circumstances, our loved ones, whether we have pre-existing mental health vulnerabilities, whether we had been experiencing pre-existing long-standing, you know, racial and other educational, economic inequities, and those sorts of things, which all can really come to bear during a time like this. So, I mean, the stat you gave from Mental Health America says a lot about the level of impact of isolation in and of itself. You know, and I guess what I want to say is, even though all of this can be, you know, so overwhelming in terms of like the global reach of it all and the level of distress and the prevalence, it doesn't mean that we are in a place of futility by any means. We all have things that we can do to better our own sense of groundedness, well-being, or to even just process the experiences of loss or uncertainty that we're in right now. So, you know, those are some things we can talk about. And I hope that your listeners will be very actively calling in. I love this kind of dialogue.
Yeah, thank you. And I think that, you know, one positive thing I'll share is, in addition to that loss, I've been trying to get help for a loved one who's been dealing with extreme depression for about 2.5 years now. And the one interesting thing about COVID that I've found, because I've now really, really gotten deep into the system of mental health, and wow, we need so many changes with it. Yes. But one very positive thing that I've found is telehealth. Yeah. This loved one is in a place, you know, where it's hard to find providers. But now that we can access providers throughout the state of California, I'm finding that so many more doors are opening. There are more diverse providers. And this loved one was able to connect with someone in Southern California. Before COVID, that never would have been able to happen. So can you talk about that, how telehealth has really opened the doors? And of course, this loved one is on Medicare, so it really does depend on what kind of insurance you have. But telehealth has really provided people with many more options.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because for a long time now during COVID, that is one of the, you know, sort of top three or four silver linings, if you will, about the pandemic. Because of course, when, you know, as soon as the coronavirus landed on US soil and we went into a lockdown and had all of our public health, you know, physical distancing parameters and the shutdowns taking place, the access to just routine medical care and how we're going to get our health needs met had to be faced very squarely. And so from the health system and health provider perspective, I'll just say that many health systems had a plan in place to try to start converting over towards more virtual or telehealth services to be made available. But there were legislative barriers in the way of doing that, let alone, you know, just system and, you know, policies and practice changes that were going to take time. So I spoke to one leader, for example, at a top New York City health system who said they had a 7-year plan to transition to the ability to provide telehealth services that after COVID hit, they were able to do in 2 weeks' time. Wow. And so, you know, that is not an uncommon thing. It's a point of policy and advocacy need, because the way those laws changed were squarely written around COVID and were to revert back as soon as the pandemic, quote unquote, ended. Well, that I think is changing in the policy arena at the national level, so that we will not just revert back and withdraw all of those telehealth services. So, you know, what it means to us, you know, average people on the ground, is that not only can you very likely see your primary care provider over a virtual visit these days, but like you said, mental health services are now abounding via telehealth. And you're right, it does matter if you have private insurance or Medicare or Medicaid. But what I would say is there is a good likelihood that no matter what level of coverage you have, that is accessible to you if you persevere and keep exploring it and keep asking the question.
Right. I'm so glad to hear you say that telehealth will not go away after COVID, because providers have proven that it works, and it's so crucial to people who might not have access to that many health professionals in their area.
Right, right. And I think, you know, the nuances about telemental health services are both on the side of, there is research to show that some forms of therapy are equally efficacious via, you know, virtual video conferencing or even telephone delivery. that also it may remove a significant barrier for those who may have needed mental health services for a long time, but for a variety of reasons, whether it was true access to care or even just our own internal barriers of like the idea of exploring that and going to a mental health facility potentially, and just concerns about whatever confidentiality and stigma and things like that kind of can be diminished, I think, when you can stay in the comfort of your own, you know, home environment and kind of explore this on your own terms. And then on the other side of it, there are some individuals who feel like they just can't connect without being with the therapist in the room or the psychiatrist in the room. And that's right. Fair too. And you know, in my own personal life, those who feel that way have actually managed to find mental health professionals who are doing in-person care as well.
And I should also note, because a lot of our listeners don't use computers, they don't have smartphones. My loved one does not like dealing with these technologies. And luckily, they have been able to talk with the provider and say, can I just do a phone conversation rather than a Zoom call? I don't want to bother with that. Yes. And luckily, every provider has said yes, and it's been covered by Medicare.
Yeah, that's the way that the policy changes have been really significant, because in the past, they wouldn't have been covered. Right. And so, you know, if services are not billable for the provider, that's a significant barrier. You know, it would mean that they're opening up to, you know, pro bono services, which hopefully many providers are doing, but they also have to survive. You know, so it has to be a balance of being able to bill for services appropriately. And, you know, it brings up a whole other area of mental health care access, which is about the workforce and the distribution and the race, ethnicity, cultural background, being representing the population to be available among mental health professionals. And then lastly, just cultural competency training and better fluency, even for those of us who are mental health professionals who come from, you know, whatever other spaces. I mean, there's, again, I think one of the silver linings of COVID at the national level is that the dialogue around these issues of mental health experiences and distress, and what do we do about that to help ourselves or to help a loved one, are really so much, the dialogue is so much greater and so much more ubiquitous in a way, because for so many people who had never been able to relate to those who talk about having a mental health condition, their experiences actually allow them to relate just a little bit even, but they're able to kind of learn some of the language, and that becoming so much more universal. I've heard from, for example, people in the lived experience movement, meaning those who survived their own attempt or suicidal struggle, that they feel more validated than they ever have before because of that sense of sort of shared suffering, if you will, and experience.
Mm. That's really incredible. I would love to do an entire show about that. Just how people who've been dealing with mental health issues have been affected by COVID. So this is nothing new for them. But COVID has just changed so much. And in some cases, I think it's helped because, at least in my own experience, this person feels like, well, no one's pressuring me to get out. I can heal on my own terms rather than have all of these people say, let's go out, when they don't want to. One more resource I wanted to share, Dr. Moutier. Psychology Today has an amazing website that allows you to search for therapists, psychiatrists, psychologists. And again, it opens up so many new providers because of telehealth, for example, in the state of California. And the other thing that's amazing about it is, you know, you can choose gender, you can show non-binary, there are different types of therapy. If you have insurance, if you don't, if you're looking for sliding scale, what issues you're looking for, cultural sensitivities come up. So it's just a really amazing resource. And again, that is psychologytoday.com.
That is terrific. And there are a couple national level resources in addition to Psychology Today. SAMHSA has a wonderful treatment finder tool that maybe we can share somehow with your listeners. So SAMHSA has one, and there's also one separately for substance use and addiction services treatment finder, which is, that's a whole other area that also has gone into more virtual arenas, which is absolutely important and necessary for people to be able to access substance use treatment resources.
Can you tell us more about SAMHSA?
Oh, sure. SAMHSA is our federal government's branch that focuses on mental health and substance abuse in our nation. And so, namely, they fund some research, and they fund a lot of programs that allow for accessing mental health services at the community level, especially for those who don't have private insurance. So SAMHSA, which is SAMHSA, Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration. That's what that stands for.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you were to just put into a search function, SAMHSA treatment finder, you would probably come up with their link. And on that, you can then search in, whether it's by geography or by issue, similar to Psychology Today. So it's just another possible resource.
Well, thank you for that one. And their phone number is 800-662-4357, 800-662-4357. We will also put a link at yourcallradio.org. We have an email from Alicia who says, Cal Hope's Warm Line offers emotional support with COVID issues. They do really amazing work. Their number is 833-317-4673, 833-317-4673. And their website, you can go to mentalhealthsf.org. Oh, that's a different website, but mentalhealthsf.org to find various support groups. Thank you so much, Alicia, and thanks for the work that you do. If you'd like to join us, if you'd like to share resources, just talk about how you're coping right now. We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We're joined today by Dr. Christine Moutier, Chief Medical Officer at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Dr. Moutier knows the impact of suicide firsthand after losing colleagues. As you said, Dr. Moutier, there are so many levels to this. Let's stick with adults for a little while longer, and then we'll transition to younger adults, teens, and children. Thinking about COVID relief and how people are struggling so much, lost their jobs, lost their small businesses, they don't know when they're going to go back. According to a new survey from Pew, 70% of unemployed people who lost their job say that being out of work has left them very, very stressed. Over 5 in 10 say that they're dealing with anxiety or depression. 81% said that they felt adrift, they fought more with their loved ones, or experienced other emotional issues since losing their jobs. Can you talk about this, and what advice would you give to people who are they're dealing with so much uncertainty because they've lost their job or their small business?
Yes. I mean, I think the hard thing is to kind of, if you're having that experience, it's obviously enormously stressful. And I think right now, even if you haven't, what is stressful is the realization that the level of the number of people going through this is so much greater all at once right now. So there's just this sort of enormity of it all. But I want to remind all of us that even in the face of the most tremendously stressful circumstances, which in all likelihood, every one of your listeners has faced, because it's part of the human experience, that I think we don't teach children. When we get to the topic of youth, we can go there a little more. It is just simply part of the human experience that we will experience distress. We will experience suffering and loss and unexpected, unanticipated changes in life that we can't plan for. And so when you really think back on that, you might connect with the part of you that realizes you have actually dealt with a lot before. The human spirit is incredibly resilient. We are hardwired to problem solve, to do so creatively, and to get through it. But there are impediments to that are really important to address. And, you know, so for example, if you have a history of clinical depression or clinical anxiety, those are health issues that are not just things that are choices we're making. They live in our brain. Our brain is a physical organ in the body, and they can impede our ability to think creatively and problem solve and come back and bounce back to whatever our baseline sense of hope and optimism might be. We have different levels of baseline, but we're very homeostatically driven creatures. So we tend to come back to that place of homeostasis unless there's a significant and unaddressed impediment in the way, like an untreated mental health condition, like maybe trauma that hasn't been addressed in the past, or like escalating substance use that does have an effect on you know, coping and brain functioning at a physiological level. So, you know, I think the most kind of big picture message that I would give and that I constantly try to remind myself of is that even when things feel the most uncertain, because we can't predict the future, but that was always true is the reminder. But even when there's that level of uncertainty, there are things that are within your control. And I'm talking about, you know, make the list, and it can be a very basic list, but it can be things that make a difference. Like you control when you are sleeping at night to a large extent, your bedtime. You can control if you do some deep breathing exercises. You can make a plan with some basic outline of the schedule for your day tomorrow, three tasks that you hope to accomplish. So that's what I'm talking about, that level of control we have. And it turns out some of those things are the very things that will help us to stay grounded, help our physiology and our thoughts to come right back into center, and allow us then to be sort of re-centered to be able to take a step forward.
You're just reminding me that we really should do a show about how to deal with this. You know, like you said, walks, you know, being out in nature. I mean, those of us who live near the ocean are so lucky to have that. I mean, that helps so much. I mean, even the science shows that helps at this point, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, just on that topic, even something as what might seem minor as taking a 20-minute walk three or four times a week is enough on its own to shift your brain health into a different place, let alone, of course, being good for your heart as well. So, I would encourage everyone to think about those things. What I think can be difficult is it feels so enormous. It can feel overwhelming. And so you think what you would have to do to counter it would be equally complicated and enormous, but it doesn't. It can start with something as just kind of concrete and simple as that.
Well, today we are talking about mental health resources, how everyone is doing, with Dr. Christine Moutier, Chief Medical Officer at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Lisa in Oakland. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Yeah, I think your guest is bringing up some really good points, especially the meditation, which I have found really helpful. But one thing I have found difficult is that a lot of therapists don't take insurance, and certainly very few of them take Medi-Cal or Medicare. So I was just wondering if you have any information on that, like what percentage of therapists actually take insurance?
This is one.
Do
of
you
our,
know, Dr. Moutier?
I don't think we have that data collected up. I've never seen it anywhere. And what I would say is just more experientially, that it depends on the area that you're living in. And of course, now that teleservices is available, that actually could be a game changer to this issue. This has been one of the broken things about our healthcare system, is that, just very briefly, because compensation or billable services have been at, in some cases, incredibly low amounts by various Medicaid and Medicare, many mental health practitioners have opted to not take insurance, which from a public health standpoint is a major problem. And because, you know, that really then says you have to have means in order to access mental health care, which is against the Hippocratic Oath. It's not ethical. It's not right. And it's certainly not good for the public's overall health and mental health. So it is possible that with telehealth services, that this ability to opt to a cash only model of practice may become less and less common. And I say that because many of the providers who are offering telehealth services are doing so as part of a group or part of a larger, you know, health provider network or system. And those systems, there are rules. If they have contracts with Medicare or Medi-Cal, they can't, or Medicaid, they can't just then say to some other patients, "We only, you know, you have to pay cash." That's breaking the official rules. So there may be some things that you're making me think of, actually, Lisa, that I hadn't even thought of before that may improve. And what I will say to you is that that SAMHSA treatment finder that we were talking about earlier, that should help you find mental health professionals that do take Medicare and Medicaid, because they do exist. There, it is just harder to find. And in some locales, like I said, you know, in certain areas of the country, most of the mental health practitioners take insurance. But in some cities, like San Francisco, like New York, like LA, San Diego, you're harder pressed to find them who take insurance.
Well, and Lisa, I just was searching at psychologytoday.com. You just type in California, and then I think you said Medi-Cal. A number of therapists take Medi-Cal, and a number of therapists take Medicaid. And when you scroll down, there's a nice diverse range of therapists. What's great about Psychology Today is some of the therapists actually have a 15-second video, so you can watch them basically just say hi, and they talk about their overall philosophy. And maybe based on that, you might decide if it might be a good fit. But that's what I love about Psychology Today and telehealth, is that it's just opened so many more providers. And because if you're in one city or just like the Bay Area, even, it can be kind of limiting, and depending on what insurance you have. So be sure to check psychologytoday.com, and the search feature is very, very user friendly. So I hope that helps. Thank you so much for calling in. We have a number of emails. Sandy writes, well, here, another related one. How can a recent UC Berkeley grad with no insurance find a therapist working part-time and feels she cannot afford a counselor? Sandy, again, if you go to Psychology Today, if you type in price, type in sliding scale, and it'll bring up the therapist who accepts sliding scale. And then this is what I've found in my experience, you email them. Or even call them and talk to them about your personal situation. And some people are just really willing to help you with that. Do you have anything else to add on that, Dr. Moutier?
Yes, there are numerous centers, including ones that you wouldn't necessarily think of as providing mental health services, like Jewish community centers, JCCs. Will oftentimes have social workers and other therapists who offer therapy on a sliding scale. So I think it is a matter of kind of going into your own advocating for yourself mode and really search around online. And I would also say, if you're in a circle of friends or coworkers, hopefully you are, where you can talk about real issues like this. And Rose, I do love that your show is so, you know, meeting people right where we're at, so that it's, you know, useful and pragmatic and very down to earth. and all about the resources. But if you're in that kind of social circle, it's incredibly helpful to talk to people and find out what they have been able to learn through looking for their own therapists. You know, that kind of network where we share information about experiences with in therapy and even with different psychiatrists and other modalities of treatment is incredibly helpful, because as you started out, Rose, and kind of alluded to, a lot of things need reform and need to be fixed. Right. And so these informal networks, you can learn a lot. And I will say, just at the national level, the science around treatments is growing tremendously. Mm. But you know, it always takes us a while to sort of translate the science into kind of you know, readily available information so that people know about cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectical behavior therapy, EMDR for trauma, the eye movement desensitization type of treatments. All of these and many more have a growing body of research that's incredibly positive in terms of the impact on depression, anxiety, trauma, addiction. So I think it's great that we're now, you know, so many people are looking for services, but it does point out the need. Like, we really have to help message, like, how do you find one given right. all these different types of circumstances?
Right. And you have to be very persistent and very patient. It's not easy, but it's getting better because of telehealth. People called back. I got the appointment for my loved one, and I was just kind of floored by how fast it all happened, because that did not happen before COVID. So Sandy, thank you for writing in. I'll send you a link for Psychology Today. Larry writes, I just want to say that for me, online 12-step meetings have been a lifeline, not just AA, MA, or others for substances, but there's also Codependence Anonymous, Adult Children of Alcoholics, and others offer a chance to share with other people who share similar issues and struggles. Thanks to Zoom, there's a meeting virtually around the clock. Participants who dial in can also choose not to be on camera. It's such an important point. Thank you, Larry. And NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness, has so many amazing Zoom courses. So be sure to look into that. And they really, really help. Do you have any other recommendations for Zoom courses like that, Dr. Moutier?
Oh, sure. Well, at my organization, AFSP, which is the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, our chapters are offering lots of things over Zoom. And those are things like we created a less than 1 hour program called Enhancing Mental Health During COVID-19. And it's really very practical learnings for ourselves and for our loved ones about, you know, kind of what we were getting into earlier about how do we optimize our mental health right now and really shore up our resilience. We have another program called Talk Saves Lives that is a sort of basic education for anyone who wants to learn about suicide risk and prevention. A little bit about the science, but more about what can we all do and what constitutes effective suicide prevention. So we have a very strong chapter in the Bay Area of AFSP. If you go to afsp.org, you'll be able to find it and see actually the list of all of these events. That's afsp.org.
Okay, thank you. And that's on our website. Let's take one more caller. Let's go to Katrina in Berkeley. Hi, Katrina. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm calling in as an associate marriage and family therapist, and I am currently offering telehealth services to clients. And I wanted to call in, mainly thank you for bringing this, but I also wanted to respond to something that was said earlier about therapists who don't accept insurance violating Hippocratic Oath, because I think what it doesn't take into account is the system that mental health professionals are put into. Mm-hmm. Much like doctors, you know, we invest a lot of money in order to become trained, but unlike doctors, we're often then put into situations where we're underpaid or unpaid for many years. And then I guess what I want to draw attention to is that I see this as a systemic health system issue rather than the individual mental health therapists who choose not to accept insurance, because we're often put in a position where we have to do the business administration ourselves, as well as provide the services, and especially in places that have, you know, high cost of living and that kind of thing, like the payouts from insurance companies are not enough to sustain us, and people do need services here. Mm. So, and I would love if we, you know, if you eventually decided to do a show on just like how there's so much of a shortage of people who are being trained as mental health professionals because it costs so much money in the first few years, you're unpaid or underpaid. So thank you for doing a show on this topic, but I just wanted to give that perspective as someone who's training to be a therapist right now.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Katrina, and I would love to actually do a show with therapists so we can talk about these issues. And if you'd like to join that show or you have some guest ideas, please email us yourcall@kalw.org. Dr. Moutier, Katrina brings up really important points there.
Yes, she sure does. And she is spot on with everything she said. And I probably was just, you know, spiraling out a little bit about the ethical issues, because she's absolutely right. It's the system is the problem and is what needs to change. It's just that now there is such an entrenched problem in terms of, in particular cities, like I mentioned, with, you know, finding a therapist or a psychiatrist who will take insurance. And it is the mental health professionals are stuck between a rock and a hard place for the reasons that she outlined. And yet, it's why we at AFSP, we have a very strong advocacy voice with about 40,000 voluntary field advocates all across the country. Sign up to be one if you're passionate about these issues. We make it very easy with, you know, two clicks and your email is sent off to your legislator. But we are advocating for the changes that will hopefully eventually then allow for appropriate reimbursement, billable services to include suicide preventive steps that mental health clinicians, but also primary care and emergency personnel need to take. And that will allow for, you know, the appropriate changes to happen, which would mean greater access for the general public for mental health services. There are major problems within the field of medicine in terms of, you know, what can be billed for, say, especially invasive procedures, which sometimes don't have near the evidence that cognitive behavioral therapy has, for example. And those are issues of equity and fairness in healthcare, actually.
Well, Dr. Moutier, this went by so quickly. We're going to have you back to talk about youth and spend the whole hour on that, because there's really a crisis with teens, young kids, and we'd love to really just spend more time specifically on that issue. So thank you again so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Christine Moutier is Chief Medical Officer at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and you can find all of the resources that we mentioned at yourcallradio.org. We will continue to do mental health shows. We really need to invest more in this issue to ensure that people get help and that providers are paid a living wage and are treated with dignity and respect. It just says so much about a society, about how this issue is really dealt with. So we will definitely continue to follow this. Coming up after a quick break, we are going to talk about the vaccine rollout in California. We decided to dedicate every Thursday show at about 10:40, 10:45 to this issue because things are moving so quickly. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.